Thanks for tuning in to the Illuminations Podcast. We love having you here. It is our mission to be a beacon of light on your journey towards conscious and mindful living. In our weekly episode, we bring you inspiring change makers in the field of spirituality, healing, personal growth, and wellness who share their insight and expertise so you can navigate your way to a happier, healthier, and more purposeful life.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Illuminations World Podcast. I'm your host, Nia, coming to you with another exciting topic. So today we will be talking about how to overcome the feeling of not being good enough. And to talk to you about this episode, I have a super special guest with me. Her name is Dr. Irina Khanna. She is a well-known hypnotherapist, psychotherapist, and transgenerational healer, focusing on resolved inherited family programs through constellation therapy. She graduated from a degree in dentistry. She began her career after experiencing life-changing results from experiencing and resolving unconscious patterns within her. This led to her to study further on how our mind and energy levels influence areas of our life that appear unknown to our conscious understanding. So thank you so much, Dr. Irina, for joining me today. How are you?
I'm good, and thank you so much for inviting me for this podcast.
Thank you so much for coming here. So to start off this topic, can you please give us some insight on how or what are the limitations of having this feeling of not being good enough?
Okay. So first to start with, I believe not good enough is not a feeling. It's more like a belief.
Okay.
When you believe you're not good enough, then there are a series of, you know, feelings that one experiences, such as probably anxiety and fear to, you know, open yourself up to new opportunities. It creates the sense of helplessness and hopelessness and sadness and loneliness, and list is really long of the feelings that you will experience if you really believe you are not good enough.
Okay, so it's the belief.
It's a belief. It's definitely a belief. And, you know, interesting part is that this belief is not always negative. This is my opinion because, for example, if I believe I'm not good enough to fly an aeroplane, that's kind of true because I've never done it, nor that I ever thought doing it. But if you look at it from the more realistic point of view, it kind of guides you what are the skills and competences that you need to have to achieve whatever you want to achieve. So in realistic sense, you might not be good enough for a lot of things in your life, but that doesn't mean you're not valuable. So that's the main point, I believe. So like very often we have this inner sense, oh, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy enough, and that's the problem.
And in your opinion, how does that come about? So when do we start, or when do people start having this negative side of believing that they're not good enough or not worthy enough?
Yeah, and that's also quite interesting that as children, our self-esteem, because not good enough is part of your self-esteem. Correct. And when we are born, we don't have unhealthy or low self-esteem. We're pretty good. But as we are growing up, and actually there is a research done that from childhood to your adolescence, your self-esteem quite decreases. And then it begins to increase, probably because you learn new skills and competence, and there is enough evidence that you are good enough in one thing and another. And then as we approach to our old age, around probably the time when we retire, then again self-esteem begins to come down.
That's so interesting, and I'm really curious to know why is that a dip? So why do we start off with first feeling good enough? Because ideally, when you're little, I feel like you are helpless and you don't know what you're doing. So I feel like it should be the opposite. So why is there a dip and then an increase and then another dip?
Yes. See, for to have the belief you are not good enough, you need to have a clear understanding of what's enough. Right? Like an ideal, because not being good enough is kind of comparison. So when you are a baby and you begin to learn, there is no ideal as such. Your ideals are your parents. So the most of these negative self-beliefs about yourself, how worthy you are, how valuable you are, how desirable you are, it all comes from your childhood experiences, how your parents have communicated to you, your probably older siblings, and then friends and teachers and society. And very often we learn how valuable we are from our parents, from their experiences. So if there is a parent who has high self-esteem, then we feel valued. We feel, you know, that we are good enough to be a daughter or a son of so-and-so person. So we kind of observe our parents, we take their self-esteem, and then how they communicate to us also navigates us towards the low or so-called unhealthy or high or healthy self-esteem.
So what are some examples of a parent that has low self-esteem and a parent that has high self-esteem?
So the parent who believes that they are valuable, they're good, and versus the parent who believes that I'm not good enough. So that parent would be with this low self-esteem. And what happens is that your behavior changes. If you believe you are good enough, mm-hmm. you behave differently as a mother, as a spouse, as a professional, as a friend. And child observes all this, right? Mm-hmm. Versus if you believe you're not good enough, mm-hmm. then your behavior changes.
So as a parent, when you talk about the way your behavior changes, can you give us an example of the way parents with good self-esteem behaves to their child versus parents that don't have good self-esteem behave to their child?
Yeah, so first thing that comes to my mind is when we believe that we are not good enough and we know that I should have done this and then I would have been good enough, what we are trying to do is we are trying to live our dreams to our children. So we want to push our child, and every time then we are going to criticize the child. And it all comes through the generations, right? So my parent also, who is criticizing me, got criticized by her parents, and it goes up, up, up to the generations. And then I'm going to give that same feedback to my child. I'm going to live my dreams through my failures into my children. So I'm going to criticize them, and then they're going to have this inner critic inside them, and it's kind of a virus that we need to heal.
So when you talk about our generations, if you could give me a scale of 1 to 10, an average person, in your opinion, how much of it are we living through our generational patterns or our patterns of our parents, and how much are we living through just our own intelligence or our own actions and decisions?
See, it's a very conscious choice. I would say that we are absolutely 10 on 10, our parents and generations. And as we grow up, because it's like, consider like a mobile phone. Mm-hmm. You buy a mobile or you buy the laptop, and there are some apps already preloaded in it because it's good for your survival. So you take all your beliefs, at least initially, mm-hmm. from your parents, from your tribe, from your society. And then later you have your own experiences, of course, but your own experiences won't fall far apart from the experiences of your generation. Mm-hmm. So we need to constantly work on ourselves to develop ourselves. And intelligence, yes, as you said, how much our own intelligence plays a role. Intelligence plays a role to open you up. It's more like awareness, I would say, rather than intelligence. Mm-hmm. To know what is it that you are carrying from your parents and generations, mm-hmm. and what do you want to open yourself up. So further you move away mm-hmm. from your family, mm-hmm. looking forward to what else is possible, the more you are going to develop your own, you know, skills and inner skills, I would say, to manage yourself.
So for those who are listening, and let's say when we talk about self-awareness, what are the first steps towards being self-aware, and how do we go about doing that? And what does that even mean to be self-aware?
Yeah, so I think the first step and only most important step is to accept, to understand where you are. So when I say I'm not good enough, to understand what do I mean by that, okay? And most often, there are different levels of not good enough, as I said. So I might not be good enough at some skills, and all of us have those skills that we are not good enough. We have probably never even thought about those skills. But even if I want to fly aeroplane, going back to my example, I need to know what kind of skills I will require, yeah. Right? And if I do have a desire, then of course I'm going to move towards it. But if you have, I'm not good enough at the level of being, mm-hmm. at the level of your existence, mm-hmm. even if I have the knowledge of what skills I need to be a good pilot, this at the level of being doesn't allow me to open up myself. Does that make sense? So that's the damage that happens in the childhood, that you begin to believe you are not good enough at being you. Like, I'm not good enough at being Irina. I'm not good enough at being a daughter. Or then that's a very sad story.
So when you say it almost becomes part of your
part
identity.
Part of your identity, yes.
Wow. And how does that then affect the way you live the rest of your life?
Oh my God, that varies from person to person. So somebody might have, you know, believes that I'm stupid, I'm not good enough because I'm stupid, or I'm not good enough because I'm not beautiful enough. And that creates, you know, anxiety, because identity most often is something that you can't change, mm-hmm. right? So acceptance is the first step. You need to accept where you are. That's yeah. very, very important.
So once you first, okay, let's say you realize, or you're like, okay, I'm not good enough. I feel horrible. I can't do anything. I'm not good enough. You accept it. You accept, okay, this is where I am. And then from there, then what do we do?
No, that's not what you accept. That's not what you accept. So when there is a identity involved in it, so you begin to, for example, I'll give you my example. It's quite mm-hmm. personal, but I don't mind sharing it. When I was very little, not very little, probably like four, five, six, that I do remember clearly, one of my most favorite aunts, sister of my mother, once told me that you are not part of our family. You know, you are adopted. Look at your eyes. Your eyes are dark, and all of us have, you know, light eyes, like a blue and green eyes. And didn't you realize that you are not adopted? I mean, it was one of the most unwise things that you can do with a child. And I remember coming back home and, you know, watching myself, I mean, looking into the mirror and crying and crying. So every time I would do that, I was alone in the room. And once my mother just came in and asked, what are you doing? Like, why are you looking at yourself in the mirror and crying? Mm. And I told her that I know that you are hiding from me, and I know that I have, you know, dark eyes, and I'm not part of the family. So that was pretty traumatic for me. I actually worked on it mm-hmm. because at the time, at the age of 4 and 5, you do not have the skills, right, mm-hmm. to understand the situation. Yeah. And it's your identity. Like, I didn't know what else to do. I couldn't have probably changed my eye color. I couldn't have changed the reality that I'm adopted, because I truly believed I was adopted. Wow. For many, many years, no matter what my parents told me and how much evidence they gave me, you know. So that identity is very painful at the time. And mm-hmm. obviously, at that time, you can't work. Mm-hmm. We never start working, I'm not good enough at the age of 5.
Exactly.
But whatever it is, let's say today, if I'm not okay with my dark eyes, yeah, color of my eyes, now I can't change that, yeah. right? So I have to accept that. That's what I'm saying. Not that I'm not good enough, mm-hmm. but whatever is happening, I might not like I'm a woman or a man, or, you know, my nationality or my religion or my... So there are a lot of things that people are not happy about themselves, but it's their identity. Exactly. So acceptance and self-love begins as a step.
So I think that statement that you made, like acceptance and self-love, mm-hmm. because I feel like with what you see on social media and what's happening with the world, trying to, you know, this cosmetic industry
yes.
and wanting to change everything about yourself yes. and so on, this concept of self-love, especially when you're comparing yourself with other people, how do you work on self-love, especially if it's coming from a place of deep hatred or deep dislike about yourself.
Yeah.
Once you, let's say, want to accept it, how do you get to that process or get on that road of self-love? What do you do?
See, the best way that I know to do this process of, you know, start falling in love with yourself is acceptance of yourself. Mm-hmm. And you can accept yourself only when you accept your parents.
Wow. I really want to dwell into that one. What do you mean by that? Tell me more.
Yes.
And why?
Because until you can't accept your parents, you will not be able to accept yourself. The half of you is each of your parent. So half of you is your dad and half of you is your mom. And usually this identity self-love or self-non-acceptance, yeah, when we don't accept ourselves, then we begin to say, oh, I'm not good enough or I'm worthless, stems from not accepting your parents.
Can you give us an example of a case you perhaps had or someone that you've encountered or a personal story of that matter?
Yeah, so any time we dislike our parent for whatever, I mean, I'm not saying that our parents have the best skills mm-hmm. in the world or best behavior. For example, let's say if somebody has got a parent who is on drugs or mm-hmm. alcoholic or yeah. extreme
or
anger
abusive.
Or abusive, right?
Yeah.
So you don't want to accept that behavior, but the fact that this is your father, this is your mother, and they're the only ones that you have, and you can't have anyone else, that's a fact, and you need to accept it because actually you have no other choice. Hmm. So that acceptance itself sets you free to accept yourself.
Starting with accepting where you come from.
Yes, absolutely. That's your being. So that's what I'm saying. When I'm not good enough comes from my being, it's a very sad story. It's very painful. Versus saying, oh, I'm not yet good enough to do this podcast. Guess what? This is first time I'm doing and 10th time if you invite me and I'll come to you or elsewhere. And when I look back and compare my first one to the 10th one, I will be able to give myself the feedback, what I did good, what I can improve, right? So mm-hmm. this is skill. But does that mean that I have no value to come here to contribute, to talk to you, to enjoy the process? Not at all. So
it's the belief that stems from the conclusions you make out of the environment and the
yes.
people that are around you. You picked
Absolutely.
It up from.
Absolutely.
So you first have acceptance and acceptance of your parents. And as we're moving forward, once we pass that point, then that the part where it now becomes a skill, how do we practice that on a daily basis?
Yeah, that's very important. Very good point. So there are a lot of things that are good about you, a lot of right about you, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the ability of our mind. We always focus on something negative. So if you make mistake, that will keep coming up to your mind, to your awareness, mm-hmm. more often than something that you did really good. So this requires a mindfulness.
And so why is that? Why is that?
This is how psychology works. This is how human mind works.
Okay.
So when we do something negative, or if we receive negative feedback, mm-hmm. right? You will constantly dwell on it. You will mm-hmm. constantly remind yourself of that comment rather than a lot of compliments that you have received. This is how we are made. Our mind goes towards the negativity. Mm. So it requires a conscious choice, awareness, mindfulness to probably create a list for example, what are you good at?
Mm-hmm.
That would be a very good thing, right? And very often, like closing your eyes and going to those moments when you did something good, when you were kind or compassionate or you achieved your goal, or it could be like really, really small thing. Yeah. Number two is when you say I'm not good enough, again, like you have some ideal situation, ideal good enough in that sense, right? When you say that, oh, I'm not good enough mother. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of clients who carry a lot of guilt as a parent, and all the parents carry, you know, a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because there are moments that you are not good enough, according to whom? Again, according to yourself. So the helpful thing is to write down the qualities of that mother who is good enough according to you. So what are those qualities? And then kind of give yourself feedback. How much of those qualities have you exercised today? Right? Mm. So every day improving upon those skills that you are going to feel good. If you have smiled more, let's say, and if that makes you good friend or mother or whoever you want to be, or you have helped someone, or you did some gestures of, you know, kindness or whatever it is. So every single day being focused on those qualities that you like about someone who is good enough in your eyes.
So this just reminded me. So this very fact that you mentioned, it's, you know, on a daily basis, you have to write down and see how I practice this. So on the flip side of it, when you consciously know, okay, this is now my responsibility and now I need to work on this by myself, there can also be a tendency to play the victim and play the victim role and be like, oh, there's nothing I can do about it. So what do you have to say about this feeling or this way of being a victim and using that as a mean of escape from the responsibilities?
Yeah, so being a victim is another virus, as dangerous or probably even more dangerous than I'm not good enough. And it's kind of a learned helplessness, you know. You feel that you are helpless. Again, it stems out from your childhood experiences. And you believe you are not good enough. Therefore, no matter how hard you try, you will never do it. Mm. So it's like, you know, vicious circle. And you need to consciously work on it. You definitely need to consciously work on it. I mean, at Illuminations, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. We take clients through hypnosis into their childhoods. We do family constellations and many, many other modalities. And we help clients to kind of unleash those, you know, inner resources that they do have, but they've been hiding it from these viruses of I'm not good enough, I can't do this, and it will never happen to me and stuff like that. But it requires daily working on yourself. You need to pay attention to what's going on in your mind.
And this requires the willpower and...
It requires practice, I would say. Willpower is there. Willpower is there to breathe as well, right? We need to, like, put an effort. We are breathing. We are putting an effort. It's unconscious. Therefore, it doesn't feel like an effort. But the moment we say, okay, let me do some pranayama and let me do some, it becomes an effort then suddenly. So what's important is that every single day you pat on yourself, you know, on the shoulder that, oh, I've did this, something is really nice about me, and this I did much better than I did before. So you need to kind of give yourself mindfully positive feedback, because negative feedback is unconscious.
Yeah.
You never put an effort to say how stupid you are, how bad you are, what a mistake you made. It's going on, right? In your mind.
So it all comes down to A, acceptance.
Yes.
B, accepting your parents.
Yes.
C, practice conscious effort into working on it. And D, the positive feedback. And this is how you help people. So tell us a little bit about hypnotherapy and family constellations, because these are your two main modalities, correct?
Yes.
So how do you help people with these two modalities, and how are they different?
Okay, they're quite different from each other. In hypnotherapy, what we do is we do therapies that are required under the state of hypnosis.
Okay.
So that's what hypnotherapy is, and we help clients with de-addictions, with other behavioral modifications, you know, increasing the self-esteem, working with those negative situations or unpleasant situations or traumas sometimes in childhood, through which they came to the conclusion that they are not worthy or they're not good enough. And so with hypnosis, you work with the individual and their conscience, right? Now, in family constellation, it's a little bit different. In family constellation, we look what's beyond the person. So where this person is coming from. So you are not individual, but you have a huge history behind you, right? Mm-hmm. All the goodness that happened in your family and with your ancestors and all the traumas that happened, mm-hmm. it all comes down to you with like this field of information or energy that is created in your family, mm-hmm. and you are part of it. And even if consciously you are not aware what you have signed up for by agreeing to be a member of this family, you carry and you enact those situations that they were in, those unprocessed, let's say anger or grief or loss or whatever they have experienced. So in family constellation, we kind of open up the family system, we get information from this family system, and then we help client to become an individual. So yes, you know where you are coming from, but you are going ahead, right? So you leave everything that is not yours behind. You be grateful for everything that you have received, and you open your heart to both your parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents, mm-hmm. and you move forward in your life.
So stop it, or stopping that pattern, or stop from yes. replaying that pattern.
Replaying, yes.
So another common question as well, I feel like a lot of people would be thinking right now is, okay, why would I choose to go to a hypnotherapist or a psychotherapist versus going to a psychologist?
Why would you go to, I mean, yeah, psychology is very different from... let's say hypnotherapy or family constellation or CBT. So to go to clinical psychologists, if that's your question, mm-hmm. clinical psychologists can be trained psychotherapists as well. Mm-hmm. So clinical psychologists will be able to assess, for example, different mental disorders or personality disorders, or whether it's anxiety or depression. So they know how to diagnose their client, right? Mm-hmm. So if you need any assessments, clinical psychologist does that. And clinical psychologist can be also trained psychotherapist and can provide a therapy to their client. Mm-hmm. Now, clinical psychologist can refer their clients to psychiatrists, and psychiatrist is an MD doctor mm-hmm. who can prescribe the medication when needed. Psychiatrists can be trained as a psychotherapist, and they can provide to their patients now psychotherapy as well as medication. Mm-hmm. And you can go to psychotherapist who is only trained in a therapy, cannot assess their clients, mm-hmm. Cannot prescribe medication at any point of time. Yeah, that only MD doctor can do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the difference. So if you need medication, you definitely need to go to the doctor.
And how do you know, if anyone who's listening to this, what are some signs that you need some clinical help or you need to go to a psychotherapist? So how can you assess that, or how do I know who to go to?
So it depends on your symptoms, of course, how severe your symptoms are. And I would say that psychotherapist is required for anyone who deals with the symptoms, but not everyone would require the medication, okay?
Right, right.
So even if you require the medication, you still need to do the therapy. Mm. And your doctor, your psychiatrist will always request you to see one.
Yeah, because it's all
only medicine doesn't help. Yeah, you need medication sometimes when it's a severe anxiety or severe depression or hallucinations, or if mood swings are there. So sometimes you require the medication, but not only medication. Mm-hmm. Therapy always goes as a, you know, complementing it.
Because if you're looking for a long-term solution.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, I think that is all I have for you, Dr. Irina. But before we close the episode, is there any last words, anything that you would like to share or end the episode with?
Thank you so much for inviting me here. I really enjoyed it, and I'm open up now to do more of this work.
I'm glad.
And becoming better and better at it. So what I would say, and probably, you know, share, is that it's very painful to have this negative inner critic inside you. Very, very painful to keep thinking that you are not good enough, and it's not true at all, right? All of us are valuable. All of us are different. Nobody has ever been like you or is like you or will be like you. And there is a great value that you provide to the system and to the planet. And there is no point of believing in something that's not even right. So just look into it and work on it.
Thank you so much. And thank you for everyone who's listening to us yet again. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to talking to you about another topic with another speaker and share as much as inside as we can. Until then, stay safe, take care, and live light.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love to have you tune in again next week as we discuss more engaging topics on relationships, health, career, self-care, and spirituality. If you'd like to help support this podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave us a rating and review. We'd be extremely grateful. To catch all the latest from us, you can also follow us on Instagram at Illuminations World or visit the Illuminations World YouTube channel for more inspiring content. See you again next week, and until then, live light.